A morning in today's daf and Baba Basra is Kufayin Gimel. We find ourselves on Kufayin Beis Amud Beis. We started the Mishnah yesterday. We started the Gemara yesterday. Let's just quickly recap. The Mishnah yesterday talked about two people with the same name. Two people with the same name create a problem in terms of a shtar. In that, if you have, let's say, a borrower and a lender sharing the same name, so we have a small problem in terms of identifying who the borrower is and who the lender is. And even though one person's holding the note, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's a lender, he could very well be the borrower. In fact, we're going to be learning later this morning. Remember, we learned a couple days ago in terms of the commissioning of a contract and who's the one who commissions a contract. So we learned earlier that the borrower is the one who's allowed to commission the writing of a contract. Imagine for just a moment, you have two people with the same name, and the borrower says, look, I want to borrow money from so-and-so. Now, it happens to have the same name as I, but okay, that's just, you know, it's obviously it's a coincidence. But I want to borrow money from him. So the sofer says, fine. The sofer starts writing up the contract, and, you know, so-and-so owes so-and-so money, and they have the same name, and he hands it to the borrower, and he says to the borrower, here, okay, go ahead. Now, I gave you the contract. Now, you can go ahead, and you can borrow the money. And now, the borrower is going to turn around to the lender and say to the lender, okay, now you owe me. What just happened? In other words, what just happened is that obviously, being that the two of them have the same exact name, it leads to confusion. The Mishnah goes on to further say, let's say you are neither of those people, meaning you don't have that name, but you are holding a note against one of those two, Yosef ben Shimon's. But again, the note only says that Yosef ben Shimon owes you money. But it doesn't say which Yosef ben Shimon. So now you, the note holder, are going to have a problem. This is what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. Because you cannot positively identify which one of the two actually owes you the money. At least not from the contract. The contract does not give them any kind of special identity. There are two Yosef ben Shimons in town. And the contract only says Yosef ben Shimon. That's going to be a problem, as we learned in yesterday's Mishnah. What if they are a note holder, meaning one of the two Yosef ben Shimons is actually holding a note? So we haven't discussed that yet. We are going to be discussing that over the course of this morning. Stay tuned. Okay. The Gemara started off with the following discussion. So I'm just going to start from the Gemara, reading from the Gemara. And so it is on the very bottom of Kufayin Beis Amud Aleph. We did this yesterday, but I'm going to start here. Ha'ushar denafik lebeidin de Rav Huna. So there was a contract that presented itself in the court of Rav Huna. Obviously, someone was holding it. It was a note. And Daviksibe ani ploni bar ploni levisi mana mina mimacha. And the note reads like this: I, so and so, meaning state your name. The name was there. Borrowed money from you, but the contract did not identify the lender by name. The contract just simply said, I borrowed money from you. But the I is not a pronoun. The I was actually written in as his actual name. So we know what the borrower's name is, but the lender's name is not identified in the contract. And now Rav Huna has to now preside and decide over the following case. If the lender's name is not actually written in the contract, but clearly he's the note holder, he's holding the loan, so is that going to give him enough power in order to collect on the note? So I'm Rav Huna Mimcha Afilu Meresh Galusa Afilu Meshvor Malka. So Rav Huna gives an answer, which is a very sharp, almost sarcastic answer, and like, Mimcha, who's Mimcha? Who's you? Meaning if it's a pronoun and it's not identified, it could be anyone. It could be the Resh Galusa, it could be Shvor Malka. And as the Rashman points out, as Tosos points out, these are people who don't normally lend money. Meaning, who's you? You does not identify you. You is a pronoun. You doesn't mean anything. So Rav Huna's first response is such a contract does not have validity. So I'm Rav Chisa l'Rava. So Rav Chisa says to Rav, I'm just warning you, Pokayin Ba. Go look into this matter. Study it up. De la orta ba'ila Rav Huna, because I know that comes the evening, and Rav Huna is going to ask from you this case, and he's gonna basically review the case together with you. Nafak dak v'ashkach d'tanya. So what Rabba did in his research on this question is he found the following brisa, and the brisa reads like this: Get sheyesh alav edim ve'in bozman.
Meaning,
in other words, he goes to the area in the brisas that cover this topic.
What is that?
Are the brisas as organized as the Mishnayos were? I don't know. Okay.
It was something like in writing, but you have to go in like a library and research.
Something along those lines. Or, yeah. I mean, people had notes back then. Okay. So get sheisha alav edim ein bo zman. So there was a get that had witnesses but didn't have a date. So Abishol Omer im kasev bo gerashtiha yom kasher. So Abishol is of the opinion that if it says that I divorced her today, so such a get's going to be kasher. So why? In other words, what do we assume in terms of hayom? Now hayom is like a pronoun. It's like a pronoun. I understand it's not. Grammatically speaking, from a syntax standpoint, it's not a pronoun. But it's like a pronoun, meaning it's making reference to a day, although not identifying the actual day itself. Much like the word him or me or I is making reference to somebody, even though it's not actually identifying it. And so the Gemara says, I think it's now fair to compare. When the divorce document says Gerashia Hayom, I divorced her today, it's going to be good. Why? Ama Hayom Hahu Yuma Denafik Bay Mashma. Because Hayom means the day that we discover the get. Now, I understand, by the way, the built-in problem, which is that's good for today. It's not good for tomorrow. It's not good for a week from now. It's not good for a month from now. But still, the basic idea is that a pronoun can be interpreted to mean what it's actually referring to. So here as well. So hachanami mimcha me'ahu garvez nafik mitusi yadei mashma. When it says mimcha, when the contract actually says I borrow money from you, you meaning you, meaning the word you, the pronoun you, we're going to assume that the one who's holding the document is the one who the pronoun is making reference to. That is Rabba's proof that such a document would be good. So Amalei Abaye, so Abaye says it's not a good proof. V'dilma Abishol k'Rabbi Eliezer Sverle, meaning the truth of the matter is that the Brisa that you quoted regarding Abishol and the divorce document that said Mehayom, it's not good because we're taking the pronoun and substituting it with a proper noun. No. It has to do with the fact of how does a get work? What is the efficacy of a get? So the Gemara says it could very well be that he holds like Rabbi Eliezer. Now remember, Amar Edi Misir Akarte. What is the efficacy of a get? How exactly does a get operate with a mechanically? What creates a severance between husband and wife? And we've gone over this time and again. Machlokish between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Lazar is of the opinion that Ede Misiri Karte, which means that really it's the witnesses who see the get being handed over from the husband to wife. That is what is creating the efficacy of a get. That's what is severing the husband and wife. Rabbi Meir says no. Ede Chasime Karte, it's the witnesses who are signing on the document. So, if you subscribe to the viewpoint that Ede Misiri Karte, so then, the date on the get is important, but not critical. Because the get itself is not creating the severance, it's the witnesses seeing it. And later on testifying to when it was given, where it was given. So that creates the actual severance between husband and wife. If you hold a de chasime karte, then the document and the text on the document becomes critical. And so when Abishol says, oh, I know the document doesn't have all the details, but it's fine. What the Gemara now is arguing, what Abai is arguing is, yeah, but you know what? Abishol could just simply be going like Rebbe Lazar. And if that's true, then you do not have definitive proof of Avahachach Lechosh Nefila. But you see over here in our case, the issue is very simple. Because the lender is not identified in the document with positive identification, but rather through a pronoun, so it's very possible that the document fell from the lender's hand, you picked it up, and you're looking, now you're reading the document, and oh my gosh, this is wonderful. It doesn't say who the lender is. It simply identifies the lender by the word you. I borrowed money from you. So now you pick up the document, you're like, this is fantastic, and you take the document to court, now demanding to get paid because you're the note holder. Literally, you're the note holder, and therefore you owe the money. So what Abai now is arguing is that over here, I could see a distinction between the case of that you gave and the case that we're discussing right now. Yeah.
If you hold by different what does it matter?
That's coming.
What
is the Lova saying? The Lova is saying it's not you. The Lova is saying I bought it from somebody else. If the Lova is modest, so then there's no case. Then he's going to have to pay him. But the Lova is saying I don't owe you. I don't owe you the money. Could be or could not be. I don't know. In other words, we don't have right now enough information to positively say that the lenders owe the money from this person because the lender's name is not written in the document. If the Lova admits, so then we have nothing to talk about. But if the Lova is not admitting to it, it could be he's lying, could be he's telling the truth. And we simply don't know. So, Amar Leila Nefila Lo Chayshina. No Menat Temer De Lo Chayshina Le Nefila. Did not. So the Gemara says, your concern that you just raised, that really the note was held by somebody, it dropped out of his hand, somebody else picked it up. He says, I'm telling you, it's not a concern. And how do I know it's not a concern? Because let's go over what we learned together in our mission yesterday. So this is a review of what we learned in yesterday's Mishnah. And that is, they have two people in the town with the same name, Yosef ben Shimon. So they can't take a note one against another. And the Mishnah goes on to say that another person can't take a note against either one of them. Okay, so far what do we got covered? We got covered that they can't take a note against one another. Because again, like I explained in the beginning of today's shir, I don't know which one's the bar and I don't know which one's the lender. Even though one of them is holding it, that's not good enough. And nobody can take a note against them because they could say, each one of them could say, it ain't me. Meaning, yes, Yosef ben Shimon owes you money, but not me, Yosef ben Shimon. That Yosef ben Shimon owes you money. Go to him. And the other one, of course, can say the same thing. Now, those are the two cases of the Mishnah. Absent from the Mishnah, right, a conspicuous omission in the Mishnah is the case where there are two Yosef ben Shimons, and one of them is holding the note. Now, the Mishnah doesn't mention that case, but it's fair to assume that in such a scenario, we'd be okay. We would be totally fine. And the Gemara...
Against somebody else.
Yeah. So the Gemara says, Ha heim alachem yecholim. So the Gemara says it's conspicuously absent from the Mishnah, and the reason why is because it would work. Now the Gemara says, now let's consider. Why should it work? Why aren't we concerned that maybe the note was held by one of the Yosef ben Shimons? He dropped it. The other Yosef ben Shimon picked it up and now is making the claim that he's the lender. Why aren't we worried about that? The Gemara says, I'll tell you why we're not worried about that. Because we're not worried about such a scenario. So we're not worried about Nefila, and therefore, Abaye, you don't seem to be right. You don't seem to be right because you're concerned that the document fell from one and picked up from another, and from the Mishnah and from what we just learned together, we're not concerned about that. The Abaye, the Gemara says, and what's Abaye going to say in his defense? Gemara says, I'll tell you what he'll say. It's very simple. Let's contrast these two cases that we just learned together. In the case where there are two Yosef ben Shimons and the contract says, I, Yosef ben Shimon, are owed money. In other words, not a pronoun. Positively identified in the contract. So there's only one possibility, which is that the note fell out of his hand and picked up by the other Yosef ben Shimon. Really unlikely. And Abaye says, and in that case, I'm not worried. But if, let's say, the lender was not positively identified in the loan document, and he's only represented by the pronoun I, or me, you owe me money. The you is not a pronoun. Meaning, right, the name of the borrower is mentioned. Owes me money. So now, who's me? Any one of us in this room could be me. Anyone in the world could be me. So Abaye says, under those circumstances, I am concerned because all you need him to do is drop the contract. Anybody could pick it up and anyone can claim now he's the me of the contract. So Abaye says it's a very clear distinction between the case of the Mishnah, where only one other person could be a substitute for the lender, as opposed to the case of Rav Huna and the contract that was brought to him, where it just simply says the pronoun me, and Abaye says, and I see a very clear distinction between the two. Ve'ela, ha detanya. So now we turn now to the top of Kuf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, today's daf, and the Gemara says, now let's consider now the following brisa. Now, let's, in other words, we just went through an entire discussion in the Gemara between Rav Huna and Rabbah and Abaye regarding whether we're worried about Nefila or whether we're not worried about Nefila. Let's just clear ourselves of all that information. I mean, let's not. Meaning, if we can, let's remember everything, but as much to the best of our ability. But right now, let's clear ourselves of that information and let's just go back to what we learned back in the Mishnah on yesterday's daf. The Mishnah says that if I have two people in town with the same name, so they can't draw a contract one against another. They can't be claimed against as the borrower because each one of them can say, no, it ain't me. It's the other Yosef ben Shimon. And then again, the case of that Mishnah omitted is that if they're the lender and the note holder, that would work. Gemara says, now let's consider the Braisa. We're on the top of Kuf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. Ve'lahad detanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, k'shem she'en motziim shtar chov ze'al zeh, k'achem motziim al acherim. This Braisa says that they can't even take a note against another person, meaning that they're the note holder, and it's still not going to work. Now, clearly this braisas are going against our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah omitted this case, and we assume that the omission is based on the fact that if they're the note holder, then they can properly claim that they're the one owed the money. Because it's their name, and they're holding the note. Now, I know somebody else in the town has the same name, but he's not holding the note. I am. So, our Mishnah says that as a note holder holding the note, you're in good shape. The braisa says, no, even if they're holding the note, if somebody else in the town has the same name, they're not going to be able to collect the money. Okay. Head spinner. So the Gemara says, Memai Kamiflagi. Clearly this braisa is arguing with our Mishnah, and the Gemara says, now what is the argument between the Mishnah and the braisa? So the Gemara says as follows, Baosios Niklos Memisir Kamiflagi, and now we get to one of the most basic debates that takes place in this parak, and that's the following. We're basically talking about the passing over of a note to somebody else. Okay? In other words, I have a note. So can I now transfer the note over to you? When I say transfer the note over to you, obviously what I mean by that is it's a piece of paper. It doesn't mean anything. The note obviously is representative of a debt, of an obligation. And can I just simply transfer debt over to you? And the Gemara now is saying is this is the debate that exists between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Tana didan sever osios niknos mimisira, where our Mishnah is of the opinion that osios niknos mimisira, literally the words mean letters can be acquired through just a simple transfer. Which means that if I hand the note over to you, you now become the owner of the note and the owner of the debt. And we don't have to do anything else. All I have to do is just simply say, here's the note. You take it from me. You now own the debt. Now, our Mishnah is of that opinion, and therefore, you understand where our Mishnah sides.
Don't take it.
Right. Right. So let's. Yeah. So
it wasn't anonymous mission.
Okay. Fine. But now the Gemara has explained the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa, and this is how it's going to work. You see. Now let's consider our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that if I have two Yosef and Shimon's in town, and one of them is holding a note, he is the owner of the note, and he is entitled and legitimately entitled now to collect that debt. And the Gemara says, look, let's consider. It's either one of two possibilities. Either he's the original note holder. He's the original lender. Or, the other possibility is that the note was transferred to him by the other Yosef ben Shimon. And the other Yosef ben Shimon says, look, right now, the note's not due for a while. I need money right away. Would you like to buy the note for me? Or maybe he gifted it to the other Yosef ben Shimon. Whatever the case is, if you subscribe to the viewpoint of Osios Niknam and Mesira, so that means then that one can easily just hand the note to somebody else, and that will convey the debt from A to B. So in our Mishnah, when our Mishnah, again, our Mishnah doesn't even say it. It just, by the fact that it's omitted in our Mishnah, it's clear. When our Mishnah states implicitly that if either one of them is holding the note, they are due the debt, they are able to collect the debt, that's because our Mishnah subscribes to the viewpoint of Osios Niknos Mimisira. Tana Bara, but as far as the Bryce is concerned that we just learned at the top of this Amud, Savar Eino Osios Niknos Mimisira, that I can't just simply transfer a piece of paper from one to another. Now, does that mean if you are of the opinion that in Osios Niknos Mimisira, does that mean that debt can never be transferred to somebody else? No, of course you can transfer debt to somebody else. What it means, however, is I can't do it just by merely passing the paper on from one person to another. What it means is that I'm going to have to give proof that there was an actual transfer. And how does that proof serve? It serves in the form of another document. Meaning what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to draft a second document saying that I am conveying this bond, this note, over to somebody else. And witnesses are going to have to sign on it. Meaning I'm going to need an external piece of proof to show that this note, this debt was transferred from one person to another. So that means now, according to the Braisa, that just because one of them is holding the note does not necessarily mean that he is the one who owns the debt. It could be one of them had the note, dropped it, and the other one picked it up. But again, if you subscribe to Enosios Niknos Mimisira, the second person is not, in fact, the note holder, the debt owner. The Gemara says, or we could do the following. Maybe we could say that the truth of the matter is that everyone subscribes to the viewpoint that debt can be transferred just by handing the note over from A to B. The Gemara says over here, what could be at issue is proof needed to be brought. According to our Mishnah, you don't have to bring any proof whatsoever. By virtue of the fact that you're holding the note, that's enough. Meaning, we subscribe to the viewpoint osios niknos mimesira, that you can transfer debt just simply handing the note from one to another. And as the note holder, you don't have to bring proof that the note was actually transferred to you. Just by you holding it is going to be proof positive enough that you're in fact the owner of the debt. Tana Bara, just give me 1 second. Tana Bara suffer, whereas opposed to the Brisa's of the opinion, Sarach Lahavi Raya. And according to the Brisa says no. Meaning, yes, the Brisa subscribes to the viewpoint of Osios Niknos Mimesira that you're allowed to swap debt, you're allowed to transfer debt by simply handing the paper over, and you do not need another documentation in order to do so, but still, you need to provide proof that you legally acquired that piece of paper. You didn't just simply take it away from the other person. Yeah, Danny.
So basically, anybody who finds a lost note.
So according to, in other words, if you you have to take two opinions into account. One, can I just transfer debt by handing over the paper? So if you subscribe to that, and you also subscribe to the rule of Ein Tzarech Lahavi Raya, that you don't have to bring proof positive, then yes. If you find a note in the street and pick it up, so now it becomes yours.
But technically, there's no mesira there. It wasn't.
Okay, fine. Right.
As an act of.
Okay, fine.
By one
okay.
Or the other.
I hear you. But in principle, right, correct. Principally speaking, there was no transfer over. But in other words, but in theory, though, that would seem to be enough. Okay. The Idmar, and then now the Gemara points out that this is in fact subject to a debate. Osios Niknos Mimesira by Amar Tzarech Lahavi Raya, Rava Amar Ein Tzarech Lahavi Raya. And here now we have a very simple debate between Abai and Rava on this very point that we went over. Meaning, Abai and Rava both agree that you can transfer debt by just simply handing over the note. And you do not need to draft a new document saying that we're transferring over the note. Just hand the note from A to B, from Reuven to Shimon, and that in of itself is going to transfer the debt from A to B, from Reuven to Shimon. But Abai and Rava argue about whether or not, when you are now the new note holder, do you have to bring proof that the original note holder actually handed it over to you? Abai says you do have to bring proof, Rava says you don't have to bring proof, and now the Gemara is going to explain how each one of them arrived at their conclusion. I'm Rabbi Manami Nala Detanya. So Abai says, I'll tell you how I arrived at my conclusion, and that's based on the following Braisa. So let's say you have the following. Dad died and left a lot of assets for his children, and as part of the estate and as part of the assets, there was an account receivable. A piece of paper stating that Dad was owed money. So now that's part of the estate. Now, a couple days go by, one of the brothers now was holding the note in his hand and saying to his brothers, gentlemen, I own this note. The brothers are looking at him and saying, what are you talking about? That you don't owe that note. We own that note. That account receivable is part of the estate. It's not yours. So, and his claim is that, no, I'm holding the note, and the reason why I'm holding the note is because his claim is that either you, the brothers, handed it over to me, and you transferred it over to me. And the brothers are looking at him and they're saying, no, we didn't. Like, what are you talking about? So the Brisa says, how do you resolve such a dispute between this one brother and the other brothers? Alav lahavi raya. So the Brisa concludes, which I think we all would say is intuitive, and that is, we say to that one brother, they're saying that they didn't hand it to you. And you're saying they did. You're going to have to bring proof. So in other words, the starting point of the Brisa is it's possible that they all transfer the note over to you. It's certainly within the realm of possibility, meaning Osios Niknos Mimesira. But what's at issue over here is they're saying it didn't happen and you're saying it did. You need now to bring proof that it happened. So what Abai now is saying is, you see, if there's a dispute between the original note holder and the new note holder in terms of whether or not transfer was actually properly conveyed, so the new note holder has to bring proof that a transfer was properly conveyed.
That requires a dispute. Here we don't have it.
In a
previous case, we don't have any dispute. Nobody was contesting that this guy...
Well, no, the borrower is contesting. The borrower is contesting that I didn't borrow from that guy, I borrowed from that guy.
But the borrower is not claiming that the note is his.
No, but the borrower is being demanded to pay back. And what the borrower is saying is, wait 1 second. I borrowed money from him, not from him. Right. So again, so if you subscribe to Osios Niknos Memesira, it doesn't make a difference. Because again, the debt's just been transferred. What now the borrower is arguing is, yes, but it wasn't legally transferred. Meaning I'd like proof, and according to Abayi, you have to bring proof, I'd like proof that the note was actually transferred from my lender to that lender.
Why should he know?
Why should he know? Because his argument is that it was illegally. Right. It was illegal.
He has to get the money at some point and get that.
Yeah, but in other words, if you want me to pay the original lender, I'll do so. I'm not paying you.
No, you're not. Whoever has the
he's claiming that the new note holder has illicitly taken the note away, and therefore I don't rightfully have to pay him. The debt was not rightfully transferred, is what he's saying. I'll pay my original lender, but I'm not paying you. So, now we're just going in a circle. Meaning, Rav is going to agree with you, and we're going to agree with that as far as the end of the day is concerned. What Abayi is arguing is that no, it's not enough. Abayi is saying is that the new note holder has to bring proof positive that he legally took it from the original note holder. That's Abayi's position. Yes. And the Gemara says, "My love, who adin la'achrina." So the Gemara says that just like in the case that we just learned with the brothers and the estate, so I would say this is Abayi's argument. It'd be true throughout. Yes, Simon.
Why is the burden of proof on the first lender?
The burden of proof is going to be not the first lender, on the second lender. Meaning, the second lender is now coming to the borrower and saying, I properly acquired the new the loan. I bought the debt. And what the borrower is saying is, I don't know who you are. I borrowed money from that original lender. I know you can transfer debt. I just need to know that it was legally done. That he legally bought it from you. Bring proof. That's all he's saying to the second lender. And according to Abaye, the second lender now has to bring proof that he legitimately bought the debt.
If it's illegally done, how is it going to affect the buyer?
How is it going to affect the borrower?
The borrower.
Because what the borrower now is saying in his defense is, you don't own my debt. I'm not paying you. I'll pay the original lender. That's fine by me. I'm not paying you. You don't legitimately own the debt. You just took that note away from him. So why do I have to pay you? I'll pay the person who actually owns my debt. And I'm claiming it's not you. Okay. No, not when the lender and the borrower are properly identified in the document. This is only a legitimate claim on his part because he's saying that the lender may not be that person. Either because it was transferred over to somebody else with a different name, or like in our case, which is a very specific case, where the two lenders have the same name. Okay. So Virava Amar Shani Hachiv Deshamta Mehadade. So the Gemara says, Rava says, no, that case over there is different. Consider. That case over there is talking about brothers who are sharing an estate. Meaning they literally may be living all in the same house together. And they're, you know, it's basically a commune, if you will. And it's hard really to say that's yours, that's mine, that's ours. In other words, over there, I can easily imagine how one of the brothers could just simply pick up a bond, pick up a note and say, hey, it belongs to me. So there I understand where there's need to bring proof. But outside of the confines of a single house and a single estate, if somebody's holding a note, that's proof enough. That's Rava's position. Igadarim, the Gemara now is going to have another version of this very same discussion. We're going to do all this again, but just as a proof for Rava. The Gemara goes on to say, Igadarim, Amar Rava Menamin Ola Detayin, the Gemara quotes the following Braisa. Echemena Achim Sheshtar Choviyotse Mitachas Yado. Alav Lahavi Raya. And we start off with the Braisa, where you have an estate, one of the brothers holding a note and saying, hey, it's mine, hey, you guys conveyed the debt to me. And the brothers are looking at him and saying, are you out of your mind? We did no such thing. It is the estate's note, not your note. So, and the Brisa says the brother has to bring proof. Otherwise, they're right. It's the estate's note. Now, and Rava now is saying, this is proof for me. Why? Because, achenu deshamtu mehadade. In the case of the brothers, I understand that's an exceptional case. They're all living in the same house. I can understand how one of the brothers thinks it's actually his. Ava achrina, lo. But outside of that, in other words, in a regular scenario where a person is holding a note, that's proof positive enough that the note belongs to him. Ve'abaye, and again, what will Abaye say in his defense? Achin is strichle, sakadat chamina kem deshamte me'adadi, emma mizar zihiri. Ve'lo strichle aviraya kamash malan. Abaye will tell you, no, that really the truth of the matter is that every note holder, every new note holder is going to have to prove that he legitimately acquired the note. And in terms of the case of the brother, actually, Abaye says, there I would have thought that that we would go the other way. The argument would be, they're brothers, and in an estate, they'd actually be more careful about determining what's the estate, what's mine. And so therefore, I might have thought, Zahavamina, I might have thought that we don't even need to bring any proof whatsoever. If one of the brothers is holding a note, it must be his. Kamash Malan, the Chiddush is, no, even in that case, you have to prove that it belongs to you. Okay, so what do we have right now? Again, let's just quickly recap. Our Mishnah says that if you have two people in the town with the same name and one of them is holding the note, he is the note holder. He is the one who is owed the debt, and he doesn't have to bring any proof whatsoever. The Braisa that we learned on the top of our Amud, on Kufay and Gimel Amud Aleph, says no. If two people are in town, and one of them is holding the note, and two people in town with the same name, and one of them is holding a note, he needs to bring proof positive that he is in fact the owner of that note. Otherwise, the borrower can say, what are you doing? I didn't borrow from you, I borrowed from him. And you illegitimately took the note away from him. Okay. The Elahad D'Tanya. We're not done yet. We have one more brisa before we finish this entire discussion. And that is, Kishem Shemotzien Hein Shtar Chov Alachem Kach Motzien Zeh Al Zeh. In this brisa swings all the way in the other direction, which is that we are going to entrust that a note holder is in fact the lender. Even to the point where the lender and the borrower have the exact same name. If the one is holding the note, he's the lender. Period. This brisa goes in the entirely other direction, which is basically, if you're the note holder, you're the lender. End of discussion. Even though the note holder and the lender and the borrower have the same exact name. Clearly, this goes against our Mishnah. Now, but my Kemifli, the Gemara says, now what's the difference between this brisa and our Mishnah? The Gemara goes on to explain. So the Gemara says, very simple. We know, we already learned this earlier, that who was the one who commissions the writing of a loan document? The borrower. Remember what we said a couple days ago? The one who drafts the document is the one who stands to benefit the most. Obviously, in a lender-borrower scenario, the borrower needs the money. He is the one benefiting. Therefore, he's the one who commissions the writing of the document. And now, the borrower goes to the sofer and says, look, I need money. Draft me a note document. Draft me a loan doc. Fine. Does the lender have to be present at the drafting? The Gemara says that's the debate between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Tana didan savar kosrin shtar lo vavafa pishem al v'imo. So as far as our Mishnah is concerned, you can draft the note doc, the loan doc, for the borrower, and the lender doesn't have to be present. Now, in general, by the way, that makes perfect sense. Because let's consider, I'm in desperate need of money. I know someone's going to lend me the money. So what I'll do is I'll go to my sofer, I'll have him draft for me a document, I'll go to my lender with document in hand. Here, let me have the money, here's the loan doc. Good, and we'll swap. But now let's consider where the lender and the borrower share the same name. Okay, everyone is going to enjoy this? So let's say now I'm the borrower. I go over to my sofa and I say to my sofa, draft me the document, right? I am borrowing money from somebody who happens to have the exact same name as me. Fine. He drafts the document. I take the document. I now say, hey, do me a favor. I call over my friend with the same name and I say, we have to go to court. Well, why? Why are we going to court? He says, because you owe me money. So, what are you talking about? No, I have a document in hand saying that Yosef ben Shimon owes Yosef ben Shimon money. I'm Yosef ben Shimon, you're Yosef ben Shimon. So come on, come take a walk with me. Let's go to court together. Uh-huh. What? So the Gemara says that if you subscribe to the viewpoint that you can draft a document for the borrower without the presence of the lender, obviously now it could easily lead to that issue. The witnesses are just signing on the document. That's a good point. I knew that was going to come up. What Hedy's pointing out is that if you could draft a document without the presence of the lender there, are the witnesses signing on the document even before the loan transpired? Now my initial reaction is yes. In other words, I'm throwing out a disclaimer. Put everything I'm saying now in parentheses. This is my thoughts. I don't know this to be so. But my reaction would be yes. Because remember, basically what the borrower is doing is he's creating indebtedness to a certain individual. Now, even though the loan hasn't actually transpired yet, by him drafting the document and having the witness signing it, basically saying, I owe him. Now, as long as he's holding the note, he's good. The moment he hands over the note to the lender, now he's indebted. Obviously, what he's going to do is he's only going to hand over the note once he sees that the lender's prepared to actually give the money. It would not, no, because when the witnesses are signing it, what the witnesses are saying is, from this point going forward, you are indebted, which is true. Even though he didn't actually receive the money yet, he's creating an indebtedness of himself. Anyway, I'll tell you what. I do like your point. I think it's excellent. It's something to think about, something to discuss. Let's finish the daf, and then I'm here for afterwards for more discussion. Now the Gemara is basically going to spell out the scenario that I just spelled out. The Gemara just spelled out the scenario I just described. He has the loan document drafted, claiming that he's going to be the borrower, and the other Yosef ben Shimon is going to be the lender. The other Yosef ben Shimon is not here. They'll write the document, they'll sign the document, and then, like I just described, he's going to say, hey, come with me, let's go to court, you owe me money. Okay. Tana Bara, meanwhile, the Bryce is of the opinion, that the scribe, the sofer, is not allowed to write the document until both lender and borrower are both in his presence at the time. And because they're both going to be in his presence at the time, so we're not worried about misidentifying who the lender is and who the borrower is, the sofer is going to make sure. Okay, we finished off this entire discussion with the following.
Maybe you would never write a shtar when the lawyer has the same name as the Malzah.
I mean, you could say that also, but the Gemara doesn't go that far. Meaning, at least according to the Braisa, we don't go that far. According to the Mishnah, you're right. Okay.
If you go with the witnesses being present, everybody should be there. Should be no problem.
Right. Right. Okay. The Mishnah had one last clause which we didn't describe. I didn't explain the Mishnah because, like the Rashbam promised, like I promised, the Gemara is going to discuss it, and here's exactly where the Gemara discusses it. Where basically now you found a receipt, and the receipt said that one of these notes have been paid. So, time of the Nimsa, halo Nimsa Matsimapik. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. I'm a little bit confused. We have two Yosef ben Shimons. And the Mishnah goes on to say, well, if there's a receipt that's found, so then they both don't have to pay. Even if there was no receipt, we already learned in the Mishnah that if the borrower is Yosef ben Shimon and there's another Yosef ben Shimon in town, so then Yosef ben Shimon doesn't have to pay. Because he'll just simply excuse himself by saying, hey, I didn't borrow the money. He did. You got the wrong Yosef ben Shimon. Mm-hmm. And again, there's nothing in the document that clearly identifies which one is the borrower. So the Gemara says, even without a receipt, neither Yosef ben Shimon has to pay. V'lo achri yachol la'otzi aleim sharachov, tanan. Amr of Yirmiyah, so the Gemara says, bimishulashim. So the Gemara says, well, no. The document was actually clearly recorded which one of the Yosef ben Shimon borrowed, because the document itself went back a third generation. Like, remember, we learned back in the Mishnah. Meaning, if two people have the same name, so then just go back another generation. The Zaydis don't have the same name, or don't necessarily have the same name. If the Zaydis do, then go back even one more generation earlier. Anyway, v'nichzi tabra b'shma d'man d'ksiv. So the Gemara says, well, if the loan document had the name properly identified, so then didn't the receipt as well? So the Gemara says, "I'm Rabbi Yoshia ben Mishloshim b'Shtar, ve Mishloshim b'Shover." So the Gemara says, "No. What happened was is that as far as the loan document was concerned, we properly identified which Yosef ben Shimon it was by going to the third generation. In terms of the receipt just generically wrote Yosef ben Shimon paid, and now we don't know which one. And because we don't know which one paid, Hamotzi mechaver alav araya." Abaye Amar Hachi Kamar. Abaye says, no, you misconstrued the case of the Mishnah altogether. We're not talking about where Yosef ben Shimon were the borrowers. We're talking about where one of them was a lender. Nimsa lalova ben sharosav shtar shal Yosef ben Shimon alai parua shtar shneim peruin. So now, in the case where I have the receipt found amongst one of the lenders, and it says that Yosef ben Shimon is note has been paid up, so then we assume that both of them have in fact been paid up.
Why the receipt should be with the lender?
Right. No. Right, right. That part's strange. Meaning, but it's there. In other words, but it was found. In other words, agreed. It should be found. Okay. Keta Yasu Yishal Shutana im Hayushnem Kohanim Yechtevu Daros. The Gemara says, let's say they're both Kohanim, then just keep going up the generations until you finally find a point of differentiation between one and the other. You know, eventually, there's going to have to be a difference between two people. They're not going to have the same names, father's names, grandfather's names, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay. One more mission to go to finish this last string of discussion. Ha'omer levno shtar ben shtarosav paruv eni odeh ezu shtaros ezuhu shtaros. I'm sorry, let me read that better. Ha'omer levno shtar ben shtarosai paruv eni yodea ezu shtaros kulan peruim. Nimsa le'echad. Kulam Peruim. The mission now deals with the following scenario. Dad is about to die, and he left a whole bunch of account receivables for his son. But he says right before he dies, look, son, I've got the following dilemma, and I'm passing my dilemma on to you. Right? This is going to be part of your Yerusha. You see, I know that as much as I have all this paper in as part of the estate, and all this notes, and all this documentation, I know for a fact that one of them has been paid, but my son, I don't know which one has been paid. And then he dies. I'm sorry for making this too dramatic, but and then he dies. And now the son has the following dilemma, in which, and again, we're talking where the son wants to do the right thing, in which he knows now that one of these borrowers don't actually own the money. So now, what can he collect? And the answer, of course, is nothing. He can collect nothing. Because again, when you are trying to take money from somebody, you have to definitively, positively prove that he owes you the money. And right now, the son knows definitively that one of these loan documents has already been paid up.
Doesn't the borrower have to take an oath?
Does the borrower have to take an oath? I mean, then...
He was paid. Because his son is going to bring a claim against them, no?
I mean, he's going to bring a claim against them, but the claim is not... It's not definitive.
He's got a loan document.
He's got a loan document, but also he knows that one of them has already been paid up. So
don't we have you also have the chazaka that usually people don't pay their loans?
What it does is it pokes the tiniest hole into all the loan documents. Every one of those loan documents now has just a bit of suspicion that they're not enforceable, they're not collectible. And again, the rule is that when I'm trying to extract money from somebody, I need absolute definitive proof that he owes me the money. It does follow all the rules that we know. The conclusion is logical. Emotionally speaking, it's a tough break. Okay, nimsa lecha sham shnayim hagadol peruva kanena perua. Now, there is one point where the son is going to be able to collect, and that is that, well, let's say that of all the notes that he has that dad left him, and again, dad said that one of these notes has been paid off, but let's say that two of those loans was to the same person. So he now knows that one of the loans has been paid off. So, and two loans are to the same person. So he can demand one of the loans to be paid back. Now, which one? Of the bigger and of the smaller? So again, he can only collect the smaller one because, again, you have to take that conservative viewpoint of Hamotzi Mechaveh Ola Varaya. I know definitively, let's say one note is 500 and the other note is 1,000. So I know for sure that he owes me 500. Because, in other words, either the 500 loan has been paid back or the 1,000 loan has been paid back. But either way, 500 is owed to him.
That's when the Lova doesn't know either.
Huh?
The Lova knows.
Again, if the Lova is just going to make an admission that he does, in fact, owe the money, so then we're good. Okay. Right. Amar Rav Ashtar
L'Chabi. The Lova would know if it was 500 or 1,000.
If the Lova admits to what actually happened, so then this whole discussion now becomes theoretical.
Or the
Lova just denies it. Amar Rav Shalach Abiyadi Parua Gadol Parua VaKatan Eino Parua. If let's say there again, the admission over here is Shtar Lecha Biyadi Parua. I know one of your notes has been paid back. I just don't know which one. So then we assume that the larger one's been paid back, but not the smaller one. Chov lecha biyadi parua, if I say your obligation has been paid back, not the contract, but the obligation, kul and peru, and then they're all going to be paid back. They're all considered paid back based on that admission. Amale Ravina la Rava Lamiata Sade Mechuralach Sade Gedola Mechuralo Sade Shiesh Li Mechuralach Kosta Sados Mechuralo. Gemara says, well, based on that, well, let's talk about a sale. Where the language that's used in the sale is either Sadi Mechuralach, my field was sold to you, not identifying which field, so we'll assume it's the largest of the field. Or Sadesh Yeshli, fields that I have are sold to you, so then all the fields are sold. Meaning, if we are going to assume the most expansive use of language, so then you want to tell me that if the language is Sadeh Shiyeshli Mechuralach is used, that means to tell me that all the fields are sold? Much like when a person makes the admission of Chov Shiyeshli, that your obligation has been paid off, we assume it's everything? So the Gemara says no. Hasam Yad Baal Shal Tachtona. So to which Rava says no. Let's remember, when you're not the owner, but you're the note holder, and you're making a claim against the owner, where do you exist? You don't exist in the front seat, you're in the back seat. Right? Yad Baal Hashtar Ala Tachtona. The note holder is not in the driver's seat when it comes to making a claim and understanding it to be the most expansive claim imaginable. In fact, just the opposite. When you're a note holder and you're making a claim against somebody, and there's a conservative way to view your claim, we're always going to take the most conservative position in terms of how we view your claim. Okay, let's begin the next Mishnah, let's begin the next Sugya. The next discussion on Gemara is, again, another classic discussion of the 10th paragraph of Baba Basra. Baba Basra does not end with, you know, I got it. The Baba Basra ends very strong. And we're now talking about a guarantor and a loan. Okay, I forgot who told me this. I don't know who to give credit to, but show me a cosigner and I'll show you an idiot with a pen. So I forgot. Anyway, whatever. I know you should give proper attribution for whatever. For proper attribution for the person who said it to me. But okay. Okay, but apparently those who laugh understand perfectly well that when you're co-signing on a loan, like, in other words, you're a nice guy and that's the best thing we could say about you. Yeah. you're putting yourself out there and you're obviously, you're creating a liability for yourself, and the worst of it is a liability without any benefit. Meaning, you know, in other words, when you go into business and you're risking, so you understand, you're risking because there's a possibility that you're going to make money. That's, you know. That's good. But if you're creating a liability with no upside, so it doesn't sound like the best plan, and that's what's called an ariv, and that's what's called a cosigner. And we're going to be discussing now in the course of the remainder of today's daf, we're only going to go through a little bit of it right now, this idea of being a cosigner on a loan, what the liability is for being a cosigner, where you stand in terms of where you are in line in terms of collection, where the source of it comes from in the Torah, various levels of Are, various levels of being a cosigner, all that to be discussed. We start with the Mishnah. Hamavis chaver al yidei arev, lo yiparim min ha'arev. So the Mishnah starts off with a very interesting line, which is very difficult to understand. And we're going to explain it later. If I borrow money from my friend, and my friend brings along an arev, a guarantor, don't collect from the guarantor. That's what the Mishnah says. We're going to explain that better in just a moment. Yeah, you're giving the punchline, but that's good. Right. Okay. However, the Mishnah goes on to say, let's say the lender sitting down with both the borrower and the co-signer and the guarantor, and the lender says to the two of them, let's make this very clear. Okay, I'm lending money to him, I'm collecting from either one of you. So the Mishnah says, under those circumstances, now the lender can go after whichever one he wants. Okay, and again, we're going to explain that better in just a little bit. Yiparim min ha'arev, so then he can collect from the guarantor. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Im yesh nechasam lelova, bein kach u bein kach lo yiparim min ha'arev. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that if the primary borrower has any assets on hand, so then the lender can never go after the guarantor. First, the lender has to exhaust all the resources of the primary borrower, then and only then can he go after the guarantor. V'chena Yerushim Gamla Omer Harav Lisha B'ksivasav Ayabala Megarsha Yigar Yidirenu Hana'a Shemiyasu Kenunyal Anachasim Shalzev Yachzer Zishtav. Okay, I know that collusion has been very popular in the news recently. We are now going to be discussing a case of collusion. And that is the following. A guy gets married. Now remember, we all know when a guy gets married, so he has to obviously sign a ksuva contract in order before he gets married. Now that ksuva contract may in fact put him in a serious position of debt. In the event that he divorces his wife, there's going to be a serious settlement at the end of the gerushin, at the end of the divorce, where he's going to have to pay her a substantial amount of money, usually 200 zuz. Okay. Now he's thinking to himself at the time of marriage, look, I like this idea of getting married, I like you, all this is working out great. I'm just thinking a little bit ahead. I can't afford a divorce. There's no way that I'm going to be able to pay that kind of money. So a friend comes along and says, oh, you need a cosigner in your ksuva? No problem whatsoever. I'll cosign on your ksuva. Meaning, you guys aren't going to get divorced. Come on. It looks like a great wedding, a great chasna. You guys look great together. I'll cosign on your ksuva. So now, take us now a year down, 2 years down the road. And now, the husband and the wife are thinking to themselves, you know, time is really tough right now, and we don't have a lot of money. They have a great idea. Let's get a divorce. Now, I don't have any money on me right now, and so we'll get a divorce, and you're going to come after me, but of course I have no money. Now, Basin is going to look at your ksuva, and then Basin is going to realize that, wait one second, there's a guarantor on the ksuva. And Basin now is going to go after the guarantor. And now we're going to collect money from the guarantor on the loan that he co-signed. And now, a month later, we'll get married again. And I present to you collusion. The mission has a great word to describe it. It's called kenunya.
Why couldn't Malvin and Liverpool the same shtick together?
100%.
So why didn't that
mission? Okay, why the mission has to give it in this format? Okay. Hopefully I'll explain that better. So this is a very simple form of collusion where you can have the husband and wife not really getting a divorce, but divorce just simply to get money. Good. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, we thought about this already. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, under these circumstances, we're going to say to the husband before he divorces his wife, knowing that there's a guarantor on the ksuva, knowing that the ksuva is going to be paid by a third party, so we want to make sure this divorce is real. What are we going to do, says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, is that we are going to have the husband make the following statement right before the divorce. Make a neder that you're never benefiting from this woman ever again. Right? And a strong neder. And once you make such a neder, so then he will not be able to marry her again.
Isn't there a mitzvah machazer kirushato?
Correct. But when
you take a neder against the mitzvah that you're supposed to?
Machzor Grushaso is not an active mitzvah. Machzor Grushaso is an allowance that allows them to marry again. But it's not like a formal mitzvah like eating matzah, like shaking lulav. Okay. Anyway, so make a neder, and once you make a neder, so then hopefully that'll break the possibility of collusion. Okay, we'll stop over here.
If the husband is a kohen, then the whole thing doesn't...
Excellent point. I agree with you. Okay, we'll stop over here. So again, what did we do today? We completed the discussion today about the note holder and his ability to collect the note. If he's a note holder and his name is not bearing on the note, does that give him a right to collect? There are so many different issues to take into consideration. Osios niknos b'mesira. Can we convey the debt to some other person just by handing over the note to him? Conclusion is yes, he can. Although it's a debate. Does a person need to bring proof that he's now the new note holder even though he's not the original note holder? Machlokes between Abai and Rava, we assume like Rava that you don't have to bring proof. Can the two of them borrow, lend, and borrow from one another? Another debate that we saw between the Mishnah and the Braisa. As long as we can positively identify one over the other by going up generations, so then that would be fine. A father says to his son right before he dies, one of my notes has been paid off. That's going to put the son in a position where he can no longer collect any of his notes because he doesn't know which one of them was paid off. And finally, we started the discussion today about Arev. We talked about a guarantor. We learned in the Mishnah that a guarantor is somebody you cannot collect from unless explicitly identified at the time of the loan. We're going to, tomorrow afternoon, on Shabbos afternoon, we're going to better explain what that means. And then we talked about a possible collusion between husband and wife and how to prevent that collusion. And that was provided to us by Rav Shimon ben Gamliel.